Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Specialists are back, and we are recapping episode number 10 of Deal or No Deal Island, getting down to it. And wouldn't you know it, we actually lost one of Aaron or Rob. We were both sitting here saying, man, Aaron was starting to line himself up. Felt like he was going to be the winner of the season. Well, bye-bye, Aaron. He is gone. Will, what was your takeaway from poor little Aaron getting the boot here?
I was surprised that he lost Deal or No Deal in this way. It really had been setting up this episode and, you know, throughout the past couple episodes, is that, you know, is Aaron playing his own game or is he just Rob's puppet? That's kind of like two sides, you know, and which way is he going to go? And we never really see him have to make this decision because he just loses Deal or No Deal, goes out. He never had a choice, you know, to send Stephanie home or Rob home. But that's really where I thought we were going. As you just mentioned, I thought that Aaron was someone who would be very likely to win this game. I think Rob winning to me has always felt like, okay, like really, is Rob going to win season one of Deal or No Deal, being the only reality TV contestant? Like, how can the other players let him get all the way to the end and win? But we are sitting here with four people. So Rob never seemed likely to me. And then, you know, we've talked about this all season, how a lot of the cast, you just don't really get to know, or we haven't gotten to know until maybe later. Like now I feel like, all right, I get Amy, I get Stephanie, Jordan's even having more stuff, but for Amy, Stephanie, or Jordan to be one of the winners of the game also doesn't feel all that like likely. I know you've always said maybe Amy, like Amy could maybe do it. We get to know her a little bit earlier, but Aaron just seemed like such a prime candidate to win this game. And so I am very surprised, not only that he's gone, but in the way that he's gone, that he never had to make this decision of whether to eliminate Rob or not.
Yeah, Matt Boris says, I'm all in on a Jordan win at this point.
Sure.
I think I like Jordan the most out of the Amy, Jordan, Stephanie trio for sure.
That's part of the story where the Night Owls are like cocky and condescending and they're going against our heroes of Rob and Aaron. And, you know, Jordan was kind of lumped into the Night Owls at the last second, and that she comments on the negativity and, you know, the rudeness and the bullying, if you want to call it that, of the Night Owls. And so we can see her as like this positive person, and maybe that's kind of her deal and she wins. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I could see it. I feel like with a show like Deal or No Deal Island, your first season, you don't really know what you're getting into. You're not really focusing so much on the edit. You got Matt here saying purple in the pre-emerge, but she's going full Erica 41. I mean, I think when you watch a show like Survivor does have clear winner edits. There's always outliers like Erica, Natalie White, things like that. There are outliers, but for the most part, there is a winner's edit that you can see, especially in the newer seasons. Since Erica's loss, they've done a better job of ensuring people get confessionals like that. Win. Sorry, that's what I meant. They've done a much better job of getting of showing the stories. Even Gabler had a confessional in every episode. Like, he was relevant on your screen every time. I think a lot of times with new shows, they don't really know what story they're telling you throughout the entire thing. And so they kind of go with what's our best sound bites, what's the best thing to go with for this episode, not necessarily worrying about what the winner is going to be like at the end, how that winner is going to be received. You want your winner to be good. But I think the show being good is so much more important than the winner being good. And that's what this comes down to.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree with you. Like, just make the show fun and entertaining and, like, worry about the winner maybe in the last episode or last two episodes or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, after what happened tonight, I guess what my biggest disappointment is that somebody like Aaron, who was so integral to the show from start to finish, you know, he was huge until this. I do kind of agree the way he went out feels like a fizzle. And that is kind of a bummer. And that is the risk you run. And we talked about this last week with Nick's deal and everything like that. The risk you're running with this type of show is that it gets to the end and somebody makes a deal for $1.1 million and just loses. Because they made a bad deal in air quotes when anybody would be happy with 1.1 million. And the problem with Aaron's more than anything is the drama was around, will Aaron go after Rob? Will Aaron go after somebody else? What's going to happen? And when you have it end in this way, it feels like, okay, Aaron's storyline just ended. Aaron didn't actually impact the game as much as he could have. It just ended because even the person he sent home was Branson in episode number one. So who really, at this point, is even remembering that? I understand that there was a lot going on throughout the game, but in these big temple type moments, it just feels it's a bit of a bummer. And I wonder if that's something they're going to look into next season.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely the nature of this. And I think it's on the players to figure this out also, because I feel like we keep watching, hey, I want to be on the bottom. I want to be in the bottom. I want to face the banker and face my own destiny. And maybe that's just some, you know, bias of them seeing people play the game and more often than not making a good deal. But now we've seen people the past two episodes have made bad deals.
Yeah.
And so, and we do say it is, you know, probably it's a 50-50 shot roughly when you go to play this game. And so I think the strategic kind of, the meta game of this is to have your allies play. Like, that should be the goal. And even Rob here was saying, I want to play. I want to put me in the bottom. I don't know. Rob could have probably if he picks this, he's not going to pick the same number of cases, but if he's put in this situation, he's certainly doing basically, he's making all the decisions Aaron made when they came up, you know, whether to say deal or no deal. And he would have gone home. So I think there's this, I don't know. I think over the course of the season, the players have been, there's this false narrative of, I want to be the one to face the banker. I want it in my desk. It's like, I think a good player doesn't want to face the banker. And a good player is somebody that doesn't feel like they're going to be the target. If the person playing loses or wins deal or no deal, that they won't be select. That's the point of the game.
So Jordan really is playing the best game, right?
Maybe I was just going to, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Jordan is pretty much doing just that, where she's never been a target and she's yet to play deal or no deal. So, yeah, I mean, good on her. That's gotta be your strategy, which kind of sucks for the show. And I think we talked about this in one of our, you know, older episodes, that oftentimes the fun, exciting gameplay that you want to see as a viewer, as an audience, doesn't align with the core mechanics of the game that allow you to win the game and have the most chance of being successful in winning the game. So that's always tough with these, but that's also on the show and the producers to make good gameplay, actually, you know, exciting gameplay, good TV gameplay lead to actually good strategic, smart gameplay in whatever game you're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jeff pushed the whole big moves era of Survivor really, really hard. And in that era, you had Michelle Wynn, and she didn't have to make massive moves, and neither did Adam, and neither did, and like, you start going through all of that. Like, there were so many of those, but the problem is, like, with a show like Survivor, we saw in Winners at War, if you played timidly, like Nick Wilson did, nobody thought you were going to win at the end. Tony won that game because he played an aggressive game and knew what he had to do. And I think that Deal or No Deal Island is falling into that weird middle ground here of, how do we ensure that people aren't just trying to play as timid as possible? Because if that is what they are going to be rewarded for, you can't make that entertaining. I mean, Will, you came on right away. One of our first podcasts we did when you came back, we were talking about Survivor and we were talking about like bad edits and stuff. And you were saying, I think it was on Patreon podcast, but you were saying like, sometime they got to make the best show. It's not that they can't show the social game. It's that the social game is not always the most entertaining part. So they are just trying to make the best show. And the best show is not having 14 Jordans play next season. Like, that's, she is the least interesting of the four.
Definitely.
But she probably has the best chance to win of the four. And that is a weird balance that they're going to need to figure out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I hope Jordan doesn't win. I think that would not be. I mean, how do we feel about Rob winning this?
So here's why it doesn't bother me so much, because winning this might not actually be, like we've talked about, winning this might still not be winning. You could still, I mean, we saw Amy take a $75,000 personal offer today. We don't know that the last person is guaranteed to get $75,000. So I almost wonder, like, somebody like Jordan. They have to be. But hear me out on this. Let's say Jordan is the last person remaining. She plays against the dealer or the banker. She plays against the banker, and there are really small numbers up there. And Jordan ends up playing Deal or No Deal and gets like $25,000. Does her edit all of a sudden make sense, even though she's the last remaining, or no?
I don't see a world in which the winner of the show is walking out with anything less than $100,000, because we already saw
Dawson.
Yeah. He got a $100,000 personal offer. So I honestly think the case value, like the lowest case value, might be $100,000. That might be like the 1 cent. And then it will go to like 125, 150, and like just incrementally. And then you have your big case at the end, which will at this point have over $10 million in it. So we don't know how we're getting down to, like, we do hear these, like I have some sort of idea of how, what's, are you muted? Wait, sorry, what?
Did you not hear me there?
No.
Oh, I said they talked about final twos in this episode as if that was a thing that was even on the table.
Right. We're getting like, and I've heard of final three, like it's weird. And then it's like, oh, okay. If you go final two and if you make a good or bad deal, then you just have to eliminate the person. Like, if there's just two people, I don't know how that works. Like, I think I have a good enough understanding of what the final Deal or No Deal game is going to be, that there will be this really super high valued case and we'll work lower from that. And like I just said, I don't think they're going to have any case that's like less than $100,000. I think that would be really silly. But how do we get to that even one person? Mm-hmm. Like, how does that work?
No, I hear you. And I think it was Amy tonight who said final two for the first time and said to Aaron or to somebody, Rob beats you at final two. And I was like, wait, what? When did this become somebody beats somebody at final two? Who, like, what are we talking
about? Oh, yeah, Rob beats you. Like, he gets the jury votes to win for sure. And it's like, wait, is there a jury that's going to vote for who gets to play?
It made no sense.
We should know this. It made no sense. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, at least as, you know, podcasting and talking about it. And if you're just your enjoyment of the show, I mean, is it more enjoying to be surprised on how it ends at the beginning or at the end? Or is it more fun to like know what strategies the players need to use to get to the end?
I think it would be nice if we knew how the final person is chosen. I think that would be nice. I think it would be nice if we knew how that person was going to be there, because then you could actually sit here. It's getting hard to dissect this the closer we get to the end. And I know we had some complaints on the last episode of people saying, oh my God, you guys talk about it being rigged and this and that. And I wish we weren't doing that. But the thing is, it is like a more entertaining conversation that I feel like we can actually talk about the pros and cons and what we can see than how people are actually playing this game, because we don't know what happens at final three, at final
two. There's so much we don't know.
Yeah, so it's hard to really sit here and dissect. Like, I could sit here and I could tell you that the moves made on by Q in the last two episodes of Survivor have not been good. But I can't tell you for sure that Amy and Stephanie and Jordan and Rob aren't all playing perfect games of Deal or No Deal Island. Like, I really don't know.
Right. I mean, I was trying to bring this up already on this episode, some of the strategic merits, and like, I think the best strategy is just like Rob shouldn't have wanted to play in Deal or No Deal. I think his best case scenario for him was Aaron playing and then really doing his best as Boston Rob, convincing him that Stephanie's completely full of it, which I think he had already done a pretty good job of, and then being like, if Aaron wins, then make yourself safe. Like, that's on Rob, and I think that's where really the strategy lies in this. But I do like talking about whether the show is rigged, or at least why, maybe not that the show's fully rigged, but like, why are the games of Deal or No Deal so inconsistent on a week-to-week basis? Like, that has, there's no reason that should be the case. Like, why is it 12 cases? It was 12 cases last time for Nick, and it was 12 cases here for Aaron. But Aaron had to initially pick, I think, 6 cases. And then, and then Nick had to do 8. So Nick was down to the 3 case decision right away. Mm-hmm. Whereas Aaron had one where there was only like 6 cases left. No, maybe he only picked 5 or 4.
His first deal, he landed in the middle of 3 and 3. So he must have picked 5 because he had his case in front of him, and then he picked 5 more because he landed directly in the middle. Yeah.
So Aaron's picking 5 cases here out of 12. On his first, you know, sequence of case openings, and then Nick did 8. Why is that different week to week? Can anyone even answer that? And I think that is an interesting conversation and discussion. Why are some of the games have like 20 cases or like 4? Like, it just that to me is so inconsistent. Especially it's the way you get eliminated. It's like not this small, oh, it's a little challenge game. This is the way people go home or choose to send people home. So, yeah, sorry if it bugs some people that's what we like to discuss, but I'm kind of interested in that.
But then Aaron went home tonight or last night, and now all of a sudden I have a little bit of like a, okay, maybe they are, I mean, maybe we looked a little too far into it, but.
No, I've always said I think they don't know what's in their cases. Mm-hmm. So it's like, they still got Aaron to a 66% chance of survival. With the deal that was offered, you know,
Aaron made the right move in saying I accept the deal, because he had like you said, he had a 66% chance.
Of course. Yeah, easily. And I think I think Nick last week, his first was there were 3 cases left and he had a 66% chance, right? And that was like his first offer.
I think it was 66% under, not over. Like, he had to, like, he couldn't take the deal. It was a 66% chance that he was going to lose, I think.
Yeah. So then he gets to open one more case or 2 more cases. And it's like, all right, then it's 50-50. So it's like, I mean, it is falling in line with what we've kind of been saying.
Mm-hmm. Let me let's talk about this challenge. And let's jump over into this, because I thought this one was interesting that there was a case. So for anybody who's like trying to catch up or sped through it or whatever, this challenge, the people went out in order. Nobody was safe, no matter even if they got the highest case. So the whole point was, if you took the lowest case, you had the most marbles or balls or whatever to put into another player's box. And whoever had the most marbles at the end would be the one who had to face the banker. So to go in order, they sent out Rob first. It was Jordan?
Stephanie was the one who chose the order.
Stephanie chose Rob to go first and then Amy to go second. So Rob goes out there and there is an offer. There is a $6 million case, which means you'll get the least amount of marbles, but you had a $75,000 personal offer. Now, Rob has made millions of dollars playing Survivor and playing other reality TV games, so he doesn't even consider that one. He's still playing this game to win. What did you feel about that being on there and not being something that took them out of the game? Or in the case of like Alyssa's way earlier in the season, she climbed a little bit higher, got $25,000. Wasn't a crazy astronomical amount. How did you feel about this being $75,000?
I don't mind it here in the challenges as much as I mind it when it feels like the show is buying people that don't make good TV off the game. So if it's in the middle of a challenge and the players have a decision, like Rob could easily grab it. Hey, I'll pocket an extra 75 grand. Like, I know Rob is successful on reality TV shows, but $75,000, I don't think is nothing to Rob. That can buy you. I mean, no matter who you are, 75 grand can get you pretty far.
He's got four daughters to go to college, right? Like,
right. And obviously I think Rob looked at that and said, okay, how do I, like, there's could like, how do I get the $2 or $3 million that could be offered at the end of that? How do I win the game? And I'm gonna, you know, forego 75K so I can have the best chance of doing that. And I liked that part of it actually with Rob's first decision, because he could have taken 75,000 real smackaroos, real money that actually has like spending power. Or he can grab, you know, the lowest value case and get the most power in the game. And I don't really like any other case in between, and I don't think really mattered at all. And that was like the only thing that kind of annoyed me with this challenge was like, once Rob goes and then once Amy goes and that case is gone, then it's like, okay, just grab the one with the most marbles. Like, who cares whatsoever if one of the briefcases is 3 million versus 3.5 million when hear me out, Phil, let me finish this.
Yeah.
It's 3 million versus 3.5 million. Okay. In those cases, they're going to be played in a game of Deal or No Deal. We don't know what the offer is. We don't know whether cases will be opened. And then whatever deal is made for that is going into one case that would be played in a final game of Deal or No Deal that you don't even know if you're going to make it far enough to play. So at this point, those case values mean absolute jack shit, nothing. And I liked how Rob kind of was angry with Aaron, because it was more, I think, Aaron continuing to flub stuff at challenges and Rob sitting him down, talking about it before the challenge, like, do the right move. Here's the right move. And he didn't do it. So it's more like, Aaron, what are you doing to me? Not that he cares about the difference between 3.5 and 3. He cares that Aaron didn't grab the most marbles. That's what is the whole point of this challenge. So I don't know. I think it's kind of silly when we put too much value on the cases, even in the game, the final game of Deal or No Deal, but even within the challenges themselves, a $3 versus $3.5 million case isn't going to dictate anything. So for Aaron trying to say, oh, I wanted to do this for the group, made no sense, especially when you know someone's going to grab that other case anyway.
And that's what I was going to jump in and say. Your logic is 100%. So why in the world did Aaron take the 3.5 instead of the 3? It made absolutely no sense. It was just pure nonsense. And it frustrated me a lot. And I could feel Rob's frustration in it. But you're 100% right. And there really was no reason to do anything. Patrick Stahl says, you want higher value cases here to give you the best chance of being able to get a first offer larger than the bonus case from this challenge.
I just don't think those case, like, I don't, because the left side is always 1 cent to 750. The cases on the right, it doesn't really matter what their values are. It just matters how many of them you have, but they always just match it up. Like, whatever cases you get from the challenge on the right, and then it doesn't matter what they are. They're just going to take that same number of cases and then match it up on the left. So it doesn't, like, these case values just don't have any influence. And then, and then you're always playing a math game of, okay, well, there's two cases versus one case here. So I have a 66% chance of, you know, staying in the game if I say deal. So I'm going to say deal. And it really, like, has really nothing to do with, you know, obviously the value of that deal will slightly change, but again, that's not all that meaningful.
Yeah. And I want to throw this one up real quick. It was Catherine Fenwick, Aaron exit interview. He said he still would have taken out Stephanie, but then I want to say this.
Good for Rob though. I mean, that's why I think Rob's confessionals here saying, Amy, make me play. That was like an incorrect strategic decision from Rob, and hey, maybe they kind of produced him to be mad and build up drama. That's like, I get all that, but if you were Rob there, you were definitely wanting Aaron to play and not you.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, what did you think about Amy's reasoning? See, every time you bring up a point, it just makes me laugh because you see them trying to provide fake logic for this game and it doesn't make sense. When Amy has to choose between Rob and Aaron because they had tied with the most votes, and then she had to choose which one was going to go play. And her reasoning was, well, I want to do what's best for the team. Even though Rob had just said, okay, you're my number one. She's like, I'll be your number two, all of that fun stuff. So he goes along with that. And he says, I want to play. So immediately she says, well, because when you've both played the dealer, Aaron got more money than Rob. I'm going to do what's best for the team. And I'm going to put Aaron in. That just was like, why? Like, how do they even put that in? And how did Amy even keep a straight face while saying those words?
I actually don't mind this as much because at least that's like gameplay and you're like appeasing the other. You're trying to like feign this like innocence of not making a strategic decision for yourself. And we see this in Survivor all the time. Like, hey, man, you know, Phil, you haven't eaten anything, so just come with me. And then it's like, no, I picked Phil because he's my ally and I want to make this move with Phil, but I'm telling the whole group, I know he hasn't been on reward yet. Like that to me is all fine in good gameplay. Whether the other players buy it at all. What's that?
It's just so transparent. Like everybody knows that, like her using that as the reasoning. Everybody knows that no matter how you played your first time does not actually impact how you're going to play your second time. Like everybody knows.
Yeah, but they might think Amy thinks that.
That's true. Okay. That's a good point. That's a fair point.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't, that's not the part. It's more when it comes from the show and even the editing of the show and people's reactions. And it's like, oh my God, it's like, again, and I would love for someone to correct me if I'm wrong. And I think like Patrick is trying to do this in some way here. He says 1 million might have been insurmountable, but if it was possible to let it get to 500K, I think it was possible. I'm still confused on what this would be. Cause even if I think he's talking about the bonus case. And maybe if you let that bonus case get to 1 cent, then you have like an extra, like, or zero, you have an extra case on the left. But it really seems like they just match these case values up. And our case on the bottom column of the left side is always 750. So these individual dollars, once it's like a million or 1.25 million or 2.5 million, like they really, at least to me, like they just don't have that much influence. Like at the end of the day, the player's playing there and they need to make a good deal. And a good deal means they get more money from the deal than the number in their case. And I don't care if that's $15 or if it's $4 million. That's your goal of the game. And we're not even building towards a group pot. We're building towards this like really vague, mysterious final case that we don't really know how it works yet. So maybe once we see it, it will all click and come together. But I kind of doubt it.
I kind of feel like season two, it's funny how we're talking about this. Season two could either be a much more enjoyable watch or a much worse watch. I almost wonder if like all of the conversations we're having in this podcast are about how do we think the end game is going to work? What do we think the logic behind some of these moves are? How is it going to work with the final case? All of that. And I almost wonder if next year, after seeing how season one plays out, we start talking about season two, are we going to have less fun discussing the show when we already know how it ends? Because if we weren't talking about the dynamics of how everything was going to shake out, would this be as interesting of a conversation? I don't know what the game, maybe that's why they're not telling us everything that's going on with the game. Maybe part of the intrigue is
and you only have this opportunity to discuss season one. This is the only time you can do this with any show where you keep things, you know, unanswered, and you can have speculation week to week on like, how is this the thing going to end? And there is definitely some merit to having fun with that. It is a good question though. Are we going to see the end and be like, oh wait, are we doing, is that really what we're doing? Mm-hmm. Like, then what do we have to discuss in season two? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what Patrick's final statement is. Aaron's first offer would have been 559K if the same percentage was offered. And there would have been one extra case that could have kept him in the game if he'd taken the first offer with 500K bonus case versus the 1 million.
What does the bonus case have to do with picking 3 or 3.5 million when you make the bonus case was just about how fast people did it. So I don't know how that comes into play on which case you decide during the challenge. For me, the challenge was, okay, $75,000 of real money or extreme amount of power in the game. That was for Rob. He wanted the power in the game. That one was great. Amy, she sees 75K. She's like, screw the game. Screw getting the marbles to decide who plays. I just want the highest case. And then it's actually funny. She ends up deciding, even though she was supposed to have no power. The whole theme was like, if you take a higher case value, you should have no power. And then they completely go back on that whole message and theming by saying, okay, Amy, you have the highest case, so you have all the power. That actually, now that I think about it, makes absolutely no sense. So Amy does that. Great. She wants the real money. But from there, once that case is gone, those case values do not matter. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Patrick. Yeah. Maybe I just need a longer form, like proof of this, but I'm not talking about the bonus case at all. So I just don't see how that could be influencing this.
Okay. So now we are down to the final four. We have, you know, two episodes left, I believe. That's what it seems like. How do you see this shaking out? Next week, I feel like will be a very normal episode. We're going to get, you know, them doing a challenge. One person goes in and faces the banker. They either win or lose. If they win, they pick somebody. If they lose, they go home. And then we'll get down to final three. How are you envisioning this going? Like, what is your prediction for how the final episode of this will play out to get down to one?
I mean, I guess we have a normal round next week. You know, it looks like we're meeting the dealer or the banker next week.
Oh, we are. Howie Mandel showing up finally.
It has to be Howie, right?
Has to be.
I just don't know why he wasn't the host.
I probably didn't want to do it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but he's an EP on it. Or maybe he had the EP.
I could see that being something where, like, because he did it at all. I mean, also, he's 68 years old. Maybe he didn't want to go out and film a 3-week reality TV show.
Yeah. I mean, he's also got America's Got Talent.
Patrick Stahl says it looked like Ellen's feet to him.
Ellen. Huh.
Staring at Ellen's feet. But so do you think meeting the banker is actually going to change how the structure of the game works at all now at Final Four? Are we going to get a change up to the structure a week earlier than it seemed we were going?
We had a change up in structure even in this episode where no one could win immunity. It wasn't deciding between the bottom two, which is so funny because Amy would have gotten immunity. And then we ended up having a bottom two because they were tied. But I don't think there wasn't supposed to be any decision between the bottom two. If Aaron or Rob had more than the other, they would have gone straight to play. Like the whole challenge was supposed to dictate this. We're already breaking away from our normal format, especially when you're down to four people. Like the numbers are so tight. How can you even do a normal round? Okay, you have a four-person challenge. One person wins, and then that person's safe, let's say. Whoever's two people are on the bottom, one of them is picked to go play, and then that like third floating person, they can't be picked to play, but they can be eliminated should the person win Deal or No Deal. I mean, I guess that works. But then you have people opting. You either want to win, kind of like we saw, I think, in last week's episode, you either want to, you know, be at the top or you want to be at the bottom. Like, you don't want to be that floater third person.
Yeah, and I guess
possible. It's still tight, but I think it still works at Final Four.
I think the problem has been, as we've gotten down to it, the decision of which person are you going to put up against the banker has gotten less exciting every week. It seems like the people who are in the bottom are making the decision for everybody. You know, we saw Dawson say, I want to play. We saw Nick say, I want to play. So then we see this change up to where it's either Aaron or Rob. It's supposed to just be whoever had the most marbles. So let's say Aaron had gotten the most marbles. It would have just been Aaron. That didn't feel all that different from the previous couple weeks, even though you're right, it is a structural change. So I almost wonder too, like, now that they're down to Final Four, are they just going to say, if you lose, you're the one who goes? Like, there is no more decision-making. Because really, the decision-making's become, I think, the weakest part of the structure.
Yeah, I agree that it's been this weird, like, I want to go do it. I haven't played yet. Especially, I think that was Dawson. It was like, dude, Dawson, you were in such a good spot at that point. Like, you weren't going to go home either way if someone else played. Your only chance of going home was playing yourself. So yeah, that's kind of bugged me. It should be like a punish. It should be like, you do not want to, the banker should be scary. Not like, I'm going to take my destiny in my own hands and like defeat the banker and decide who goes home. And maybe they need to just shift around the odds a little bit, but it's kind of tough in a game like I don't know. I would just have to kind of mess with the offers that, hey, you know, on average, your chances are going to go as high as they're going to go is going to be 40 to 45% instead of always, because at the end, you can always really get down to 50-50. Like, that's your worst. If you're playing this game, never take a deal that's below 50% in your favor, because you know you're always going to get down to your case and one case left with an offer in the middle. And then, and then there you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. There is something fun though about people being like, screw it, I want to play so I can take somebody out. Like that, I don't mind that completely.
Yeah, what I'm most confused about is at final two, how it's going to be.
Final three. Like, what happens at final three?
Yeah, I mean, again, that could just be the person who loses whatever challenge just goes up and faces the banker. But at two, how are you deciding? Like, are you literally putting Bobby John versus Stephanie? Is that what's happening? Like, you're just, whoever loses something loses. That's where it seems a little crazy. It almost feels like what would make the most sense for this game would be if the two people at the end both went head to head against the banker in like their own separate deal or no deal games, and whoever made the better deal wins the game or something. Maybe they even go against each other in the same deal or no deal game. 24 cases, each person has a case. Who knows? Like, I have no idea how that would make more sense.
I think a head to head deal or no deal game would be definitely interesting. I don't know if they can play in the same game, but if like one player plays and then another player plays and like whoever could make the best deal, that to me feels more deal or no deal and less like a reality competition show ending. That's just a game show for luck. But hey, you use the reality competition and strategy and challenges to get to your final two, so that would sit pretty okay with me. I think it just doesn't seem like we've been told that two players are going to battle the banker at the end. Like, wouldn't they be saying
they should be hyping that,
like, in telling us this? It really does feel like there's going to be one player who wins the show, and then the question at the end will be like, okay, we know who wins, but how much money are they going to win? Which that's risky, because I mean, for all these shows, what we want to see is who wins, and rarely does the prize money matter. Like, you watch Survivor, great, it's $1 million, but like watch Spy Games or House of Villains or other shows where the prize is $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. Like, it doesn't change your excitement or interest in who the winner is. I mean, I know maybe people play harder when it's $1 million, and I'm not arguing anything about the meaning of that, but I'm saying just in terms of your enjoyment of the show, you really care who wins and not necessarily what the prize is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is weird if we crown a winner and then they go on to play the game. That will be a very different way of consuming a season of reality competition television. Like Amazing Race, usually the last team, like they go through the finish line, and then what, the episode's over in within 5 minutes?
Less than that. Literally,
a minute. Literally less than that. I mean, Jeff doesn't even announce the winner in technically the last episode of the show of a season. You have to start the reunion. Like, it's even in the after show. They wait that long to announce the winner because that's the big question. So to announce the winner and then have 20 minutes more of like, okay, are they going to win 800,000 or 1.2 million? Is that the big grand finale?
I don't know. I agree with you, because we don't sit here and say, oh man, who's going to win $1 million on Survivor? It's just who's going to win $1 million. And so I agree with you on that. Who's going to win Survivor? Not, we don't care how much money they're winning. We just want to know. That's why we don't care what the second place, third place, fourth place, fifth place money is. Like, we don't care. Anyway, I don't have anything else on Deal or No Deal Island, but I got one question for you about Boston Rob related.
Oh, okay.
Do you think Boston Rob, being that he's on Deal or No Deal Island, being that he is such a reality TV star, is there a chance that we might see him on season 50 of Survivor? Or do you think that he has now been kind of, he is like a, because this is a big show right now, and obviously Survivor fans love Boston Rob. Jeff just announced on Saturday that season 50 will be all returning players. Is Boston
Rob? Oh my god, that is shocking. Oh my god.
I know, isn't that crazy news?
Whoa. Season 50, they're gonna do returning players?
Wild.
No way. They haven't done a returning player season since when? Oh, season 40. Interesting.
You know what's crazy though? This is the actual crazy part. Jeff said, because he knows I love confessionals, he said it'll only be players who made it at least 5 episodes and got fewer than 10 confessionals. So it's only going to be purple people. That's what it's going to be.
Wow.
But yeah. But do you think Boston Rob, do you think there's a chance?
Sure. Why not?
Never going to say no, huh?
I still, my theory for 50 is like a supersized season.
Yeah.
Like back to 39 days. But we still have tribals pretty frequently. Maybe you get a couple more double elimination episodes. Maybe you get a couple extra episodes in the run. Or if you're doing like 90 minutes or having these 2 hours, instead of doing like a 90-minute episode with one boot, you can do a 2-boot episode in 90 minutes and it feels less rushed than, you know, the double boot episodes we've had in prior seasons in the 45-minute or, you know, the hour episode. So
yeah,
I do think we could see a cast of 24 people or like maybe even like 30 people, which would be
James crazy. Jones has a great tweet out about starting a season with 30 people, 3 tribes of 10, first 6 boots, or it's 3 episodes. It is the winner of the tribal, like they don't go to tribal. And then the other 2 teams in the immunity challenge, they both go. So you eliminate 6 people in 3 episodes. Now you're down to 24 in 3 episodes. And then you do the same thing. Maybe I think he might have had to go like, I think that again, it was like a tribe swap, and now you're back to 3 tribes of 8. And again, it's only the winning team is immune. The other 2 send somebody home. So now you're 6 episodes in, 12 people are gone. And then at 18, they just play regular new era survivor for the rest of it.
Or maybe they do 2 tribes of 9. We get a 2 tribes finally.
Yeah, that would be something, huh?
Yeah. But I mean, it does take a normal, or it does take like a survivor player to get these ideas into Jeff's head. Like if anyone, like a fan says that, it won't work. It has to come from a player.
Preferably Mike White. If we get Mike White to do it, that would work. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Well, thank you all so much for listening to this. Hope you enjoyed. I think 2 episodes left of Deal or No Deal Island. Curious to see how it's going to end. If you have any theories, throw them in the comments. Let us know what you're thinking. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. And we will be back tomorrow night, Will and I, recapping.
I'm Survivor. Back on the Survivor podcast, finally.
Yeah, Will's there, guys. Get ready, get excited. We will see you tomorrow night. Bye, everyone.
Bye.